9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Currently 62 degrees, humidity's 25, winds are out of the south at 13 miles an hour, gusting up to 16 miles an hour. We are in a fire weather watch until 6 o'clock, December 15th, because looking at the Long Ranger that we'll be looking at here later in the show, Wednesday looks like another fry from last Friday. So anyway, be careful out there starting fires, burning brush piles and all that other stuff. Remember what I said Friday, don't be that guy. They had a pretty good size grass fire around Skipout Lake west of Cheyenne up there the other day over there by Raiden, and it burnt one home. The firefighter saved some other homes and they got it contained. Probably seen it on the news Friday night or Saturday whenever they had that on there, and they showing flames up to 100 feet tall rolling through there with that wind. Looked like cedars was being burnt there, so that's probably the reason why the flames were so high. Well, I got a great show on for you today. Coming on in my next segment, after we go over the grains and weather here in this first segment, Michael Booth, who is a reporter for the Colorado Sun, done a great article on a ranch up there by Lamar. And it was, the article was titled, "A Colorado Family Tried to Save Their Cattle Ranch by Betting Big on Rare Birds, and it paying off for them." You don't want to miss this. It's a very interesting article. It's a great article on a ranch and what you can do to save your ranch. The things, the extremes you go to try to save your ranch. So anyway, good deal. Hard red winter wheat cash prices for Oklahoma as of 11 a.m. this morning is at $7.78 a bushel. Corn's at $5.80. Milo's at $5.83. Soybeans were at $11.18. Oats are at $7.33 and cotton prices at $1.07 a pound. And for my old buddy Coulter Vault out there, sugar's at 0.20 cents a pound. You're always full of sugar when you're helping me, so I thought I'd throw the sugar cost in there, showing what you're really worth. Anyway, hope you're having a great day out there, Coulter. Wheat futures declined in overnight trading as concerns about tight global supplies eased. Australian farmers are in the process of harvesting what is supposed to be a record crop. The Australian Bureau of Agriculture and Resource Economics have said it expects record 34.4 million metric tons of grain to be harvested this year. Other reports, add in this, other reports are showing the quality might be that great because they've been in such a bad forced rain over there. So anyway, the quality's not great, but they're going to have record tons of grain, looks like. The USDA said its monthly world agriculture supply and demand estimates report last week that it now expects Australian output at 34 million metric tons, which was up from the November outlook of 31.5 million tons. If realized, this would be up from 33.3 million metric tons harvested last year, according to the USDA. Global production was pegged by the USDA last week at 779.9 million metric tons, up from the previous forecast at 775.3 million tons and the previous 775.9 million tons last year. The USDA raised its outlook for global ending stockpiles to be 278.2 million metric tons from the November projection of 278.2 million tons. So I guess they got that one right. That would, however, be down from 289.6 million tons in the last year. Corn and soybeans were also lower in overnight trading. Wheat futures for March delivery dropped 8 cents to $7.77 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade, while Kansas City futures fell 8 cents to $7.97 a bushel. Corn futures for December delivery was down 3 cents to $5.87 a bushel. Soybean futures for November delivery lost 8 cents to $12.59 a bushel. Soy meal was down $2.80 to $364 even a short ton, while soy oil added 0.13 cents to 53.82 cents a pound. Investors raised their net long positions on bets on higher prices in corn and soybeans last week, according to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Spectators held a net 320,887 corn future contracts as of December 7th, up from 303,534 contracts a week earlier. Hedge funds and other large investors held 36,495 soybean futures contracts last week, and that's up from 31,000 the previous week. It was the opposite in wheat as investors reduced their net longs in hard red winter futures while turning bearish on soft red contracts, according to the government. Investors held a net long position of 59,250 hard red winter wheat contracts last week, and that's down from almost 62,000 contracts last week. In soft red winter wheat, money managers turned bullish, shifting into a net short position or bets on lower prices of 1,154 contracts, according to the agency. That's a shift from a net long position of 4,882 contracts last week and the first bearish position for the grain since the 7 days ended on October 26, according to the Commodity of Traders there in Chicago. All right, here we go. Strong winds are expected this week for a chunk of the southern plains and western Midwest today, according to the National Weather Service. In southwestern Kansas, where hard red winter wheat is growing, winds starting Wednesday morning will sustain 35 to 40 miles an hour with gusts up to 65 miles an hour, according to the National Weather Service. In some areas, winds might be up to 70 miles an hour. Fire weather watch also is in effect for the area on Wednesday due to the strong winds and low relative humidity, which will drop as low as 11%. Damaging winds could blow down trees and power lines, the agency said. Widespread power outages are possible. In central Iowa, meanwhile, winds will be sustained from 25 to 35 miles an hour with gusts up from 65 miles an hour on Wednesday. It's going to be a bad day in the southern plains come Wednesday for winds. Seen a deal from the Amarillo Weather Service yesterday that they posted on social media, and they're not joking about them 70-mile-an-hour winds. A lot of them will be in the northern Texas panhandle and the Oklahoma panhandle, but you guys know as well as I do, that's not that far to the northwest of us, so it's going to be rough. So if you're traveling, make sure you're going north so your fuel mileage will be better, because if you're coming south, it's going to suck, and you're going to have both hands on the steering wheel and the seatbelt fastened up, and watch for those trucks trying to blow over on you. So like I said, you guys hang tight. This weekend, a really good friend of mine from Idaho was down. Really good friend from California. They're all down. And we went quail hunting yesterday, and, man, it was great. We got into a couple of big coveys, but we just had a good time out working the dogs. And if anybody out there is a quail hunter, you know that watching the dogs is more of it than actually shooting the bird. But, oh, man, Zoe got home last night from about 7 o'clock on till this morning. Matter of fact, I had to wake her up. She was hurting. she was hurting. It was a good day though. She loves doing that. And then I guess I didn't get banned from southbound over at Sayre because they let me in this morning, And they got a new nickname for me, but I can't remember, Country Pimp or something like that. I don't know what it was that they called me over there. But anyway, Kimber Thornburg was in there again, Ashley and Matt's daughter, and she can't talk, but I got her saying Sooner with her hands. So when I say Boomer, she uses her hands and she flops them back, and that means she's saying Sooner. So anyway, I still got her in the training mode. So anyway, she's a beautiful little baby girl, but anyway, I'm having fun with this. That kid ain't got a chance hanging out in there with her mom. But anyway, well, we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. Red Angus cattle are just more docile as a breed, just bred into them. It's been that way for years, since the inception of the breed. My two kids, and not just the kids, the older generation, they don't want to mess with bulls that are not gentle. Red Angus are more gentle to handle. We raise registered Red Angus, Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Is your cattle mineral investment being washed away? Weather can cause conventional mineral to absorb water and blow away. Simply put, your cows probably aren't eating it. That's why Purina created Wind and Rain Storm Mineral, a weatherized mineral that can stand up to the elements. Its larger particle size makes it harder to blow away and easier for water to pass through it. Keep money in your pocket. Contact Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City today.
Are you in the market to buy or sell cattle? Then don't miss Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale's every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m., buyers can bid in person or online. To consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. That's 580-331-8547. Be sure and check out the market reports and each week's penny news. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right, we're back. 62 degrees, humidity's 24, winds are out of the south at 13, gusting up to 18 miles an hour. And it's my privilege to introduce this man from Denver, Colorado, and Michael Booth, and he is a reporter for the Sun. And is that the Colorado Sun in Denver, right?
Yes, coloradosun.com website, if anybody's interested in looking at our other news.
Oh, cool. Yeah, this article you wrote, that it was titled, "A Colorado Family Tried to Save Their Cattle Ranch by Betting Big on Rare Birds, and it's paying off." You're good. That's all I got to say. I'm not going to try to brag on you too much and get your head all swelled up, but man, that was a wonderful story.
Well, I appreciate it. We had a great reaction to it from the public, so some of the things in there must have resonated with people, despite my writing style. People really responded to people in ranch country trying to do some different things to not only stay solvent, but to also protect the land. So I'm glad that people were interested in it.
Well, I read the whole article. Matter of fact, I read it twice. But this ranch, is it Dallas May, right? Is that that was the gentleman's name? His family, yeah. This wasn't a ranch that he inherited or nothing. This is a ranch that he just bought. And so he's got a mortgage payment. So they got to really work really hard to make it work.
Yep, they certainly do. So they were renting, leasing a lot of land for a long time in southeast Colorado along the Arkansas River, a little bit above the Arkansas. They have between 15,000 and 16,000 acres that they lease and then bought. And they've been running limousine cattle there for a long time, purebred. And I think at this moment they have about 800 and breeding cows. And then, of course, they have the cow-calf pairs later in the year. And they were looking, they've always had some interesting territory. They've tried to run it as a dry land pasture. They do have some irrigation areas, but they don't plow anything. They don't try to plow up the ground, and they're completely surrounded. If you look at them from above, they call themselves an island of grass in a sea of row crops and other kinds of farms. There's a lot of people around them who irrigate for corn, irrigate for wheat, irrigate for any number of other row crops, and it's quite a difference. Even when you're driving up to it in two dimensions on the ground, you can see the difference right away. So they run their cattle that way, and that has led them to protect some areas just naturally that have some amazing creeks and some amazing marshland, and then leading down toward the Arkansas River. And they have some incredible bird territory, and as you guys know, anybody in what the rest of the country seems to think of as flyover country knows that some birds that are not necessarily from the West or the Southwest have adapted to these areas because they're always looking for marshland. Sometimes their habitat on the East or West Coast has been destroyed by rising seawater or just by development. And so anytime they can, on their migration routes, see, or if they're blown in by a storm, if they see some wetlands, they will try to stay there and stick there. And so Dallas and his family have seen over time that they have some amazing bird species there and a lot of other wildlife that has stuck around because they're not in the middle of a bunch of plowed ground and not in hard-packed dirt, and there's some water there.
Well, they, in your article, you wrote about the Cornell University's FAME Ornithology Lab, and that is a very FAME deal. I have the app on my phone, actually. And
yep.
They just, some of the people that were coming out to see this were just in awe what was going on that ranch.
One of the funny stories Dallas tells, and when Dallas tells a story, you kind of think, oh, as a reporter, I should probably check that out. And then you do, you call two or three other people, and you find out that all of the stories check out and that he's got the details right. So he was one day seeing some people off at one corner of his ranch who were holding what to him looked like big weapons. And he thought,
a tank killer.
Might have some poachers around. And so he drove his pickup truck down there and said, what are you guys doing? And turns out they had big bird spotters, big bird spotting scopes and camera lenses. Yeah. And they were really interested. They were scouting for one of the big national bird days where people fan out all over the country to do their bird counts. And they were from Cornell, some renowned international researchers from Cornell, checking out this part of Colorado that they heard about along the Arkansas that had some really interesting, diverse, and very rare bird species on it. And so once Dallas found out who they are, he said, well, let me show you around the ranch. We have all these great places. And while they were driving around, they started hearing these noises of a very distinctive bird call. And I'm glad you mentioned the app, because anybody who's at all interested in wildlife should get familiar with the Cornell Labs. They have recordings of all the different bird calls that help you if you're wondering if this species is on your property or on a property that you like to hike through. It really helps you identify. And there's a species called the black rail, or some people refer to it officially as the eastern black rail, that is listed as threatened by U.S. Fish and Wildlife and is an East Coast bird primarily that has seen its habitat destroyed. And it makes this very distinctive, loud call. But people, even the most expert birders, hardly ever see them. And most of the way they actually get them for their list and check off that box is by hearing them and identifying the call that way. And Dal said, yeah, we have that one, and I could show you where they hang out. We have some marshland where the water and the marsh seems to be perfect for the kinds of things they want to eat. And the Cornell people were very excited about that. They are always looking for black rails. They are also interested. It's a pathway, a corridor for the lesser prairie chicken to get from some of its territory to another in, not necessarily endangered, but certainly a threatened species that's seen its territory shrink, and a bunch of other species. And so that led Dallas to look around and say, well, if people are really interested in this property, if birders like this property, maybe there's something in it that we can use to both create new habitat and maybe find some income, make our cattle even more marketable. And he found out that the Audubon Society has program where they can certify ranches. They don't certify the beef itself. Nobody wants to get into that kind of potential consumer trouble, but they do certify the ranch, and then they
it's bird friendly, right?
Bird friendly,
yes.
And you can put that seal of approval if you're a restaurant that's buying from particular ranches. You can use that seal of approval and say we are selling beef and offering you beef from ranches that are certified by the Audubon Society as bird friendly. And the Audubon people were very excited from their Rocky Mountain section and came down almost right away, within a week or two, to come check out the ranch. And the minute the woman who leads the Rocky Mountain Audubon Society got out of her car, the way she put it.
Yeah, say it. You can say it. I got it highlighted, so you might as well say it.
She said she just about pooped her pants because she heard the black rail. And she knew just from looking at the territory that there were a lot of other great species there and spent a lot of time there. And you know, Dallas loves to drive people all over the ranch, high and low. And in addition to the ranch, so I was planning to go down there. Once I found out that about the Audubon program, and it made me curious, I had no idea that the bird people were certifying ranches and letting their sort of seal of approval go onto a ranch. I was wondering why that would be the case. And so I'd been talking to Dallas, but I hadn't gone down there yet. And Dallas called me up and said, hey, you should come down this week because we are releasing black-footed ferrets on our property. And I knew enough to know that black-footed ferrets are endangered in the West and around the world. And so I said, okay, we're coming. And they said, well, the wildlife people said, well, you may not get to get that close to them because we're worried. That, you know, obviously they've been raised in captivity and we need to keep them alive. COVID's going on. We have no idea if COVID can jump from humans back to black-footed ferrets. So we might not let you get very close. I said, forget it. I don't get that chance to get out of the office and go see endangered species that often. So we're going to come. We're going to bring a photographer. And once we got there, it's like a 3.5 to 4 hour drive from Denver. Everybody was incredibly welcoming and said, oh, not only can you get right up next to them, here, why don't you carry one and we'll go out in the fields and you can help release them, which I don't get that offer much as a reporter. I've been a reporter a long time. That was kind of a lifetime experience for me to be able to get involved in actually releasing an endangered species back onto the land.
Oh, my, so yes.
That was our first encounter with that property, and we helped carry in that and other parts of the property there. I think were 15 ferrets released that day. And I don't know if your listeners know that much about the black-footed ferret, but it's considered the most rare mammal in North America, because they were considered extinct until the 1980s. The last one they had seen before that was in the 1950s, and they've been decimated by the same plague that kills prairie dogs, decimated by development, decimated by all kinds of different attacks on them as a wildlife species.
Right.
Until about 1981, when a dog dropped a dead black-footed ferret on the doorstep of a master's house in Wyoming, and they realized, well, okay, too bad this ferret's dead, but that means that there are other ones out here. So the wildlife community flanked out around the ranch in Wyoming and found a colony that was still existing, and they were shocked and decided to come up with a plan to try to preserve as many of them as possible, because these are literally the last black-footed ferrets standing on Earth. And they took them into some labs in Fort Collins, started spreading them around to some zoos and other wildlife areas around North America that have been approved for breeding programs, and slowly started bringing the species back. Because another thing that's important for ranchers to know, and anybody who's a fan of ranchers and wildlife, they are considered a real signal species. Their relationship with prairie dog as a species and all the things that happen in a prairie dog community, black-footed ferrets live in prairie dog holes and burrows, and so they don't exist without each other. And then once the prairie dogs start digging holes, then burrowing owls come in and rattlesnakes, and they share a lot of the same territory. They keep control over invasive species and just species that will go out of control if they're not controlled by black-footed ferrets. 90% of the black-footed ferret diet is a prairie dog. And so prairie dogs may not be too happy overall to see them coming, but it's definitely part of I think they say that 130 different species rely on the black-footed ferret and prairie dog ecosystem.
No, I can see that. It's good. Well, you're listening to Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO, and I'm Jimmy Clark, and I have Michael Booth, a reporter for the Colorado Sun, with me on here, and we're talking about a great story that's happened with a ranch in Lamar, Colorado, which is not that far from here. I'm not so sure. We might be about the same distance as you are from there. So, but they... you know, what people have got to realize is this gentleman has Dallas May, who's the rancher. He's doing a lot for conservation, and they made the ranch into a conservation ranch. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's a few different things they're doing, and I should go tie the black-footed ferrets back to the bigger picture, which is that Dallas and his family, multi-generations, his kids and now grandkids, his brother, his mom are all part of it, and they are trying to, trying to survive like every rancher and trying to find new streams of revenue, new ways to get people interested in their beef. So they have done everything from sell a conservation easement to make sure that this land that they love very much is never developed into parking lots or a wind farm, which is more likely in that area, or a solar farm, which they get a lot of interest in. And I know that Oklahoma has a lot of those as well.
Right.
But they don't want to see that territory go away.
Great.
So they can make some money for the future from the conservation easement. They can do carbon sequestration and get paid for. There are plenty of corporations who are trying to run and advertise themselves as a carbon neutral or net zero corporation. And the way they do that, in addition to changing their own operations, is they go out and buy carbon credits. And so if they can find a place that can be certified by a third party to keep carbon in the ground by not plowing it up, by growing longer grasses and putting carbon in the ground that way, not disturbing the root systems that have been holding carbon in the ground for decades, then they can produce a credit, and someone will pay for that credit.
Yes.
Through a third party.
Yes.
So they do that as well. And then they sell beef that can say that the ranch has been certified by the Audubon Society and maybe get a premium for that from the buyer. So all these different things that they stitch together are part of what some ranchers and some ranch families are trying to do to both, as we said, stay solvent and also stay environmentally friendly.
Yeah, well, Mr. Booth, if you will hang on just slightly, I need to take a break right here. We'll come back and we'll finish up this conversation. And you're listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO, and I have Michael Booth, reporter for the Colorado Sun, on here with me, and we'll be right back after this break.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, December 3rd. 2,189 head were sold. 5 head of steers at 283 brought 205. 20 at 502 brought 183.50. 17 at 560 brought 154.50. 20 at 663 brought 140. 13 at 753 brought 152.50. 7 at 791 brought 139. 6 set of heifers at 373 brought 159. 5 at 522 brought 144. 19 at 564 brought 140. 10 at 593 brought 142. 5 at 620 brought 139. 3 at 638 brought 130. Butcher cows were 2 to 81, butcher bulls 60 to 92, bred cows 550 to 1450, pairs brought 1035 to 1325. Elk City Livestock Auction, 3202 South Highway 6, Elk City, Oklahoma, sale every Friday at 9 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey, 580-497-6095.
In this area, a lot of people wean their calves off their cows in the fall. Wheat's planted in the fall, and they buy calves. They take them to the sale barn or maybe private treaty. They run them through the winter on wheat. And some sell in March before they cut their wheat. Some take them through May and graze out their wheat and sell them in May or run them through grass in the summer. I have cattle. The guys I work with, they have cattle. I'm a fourth generational rancher. I'm Monty Carlson, and I help make a difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
Welcome back. 64 degrees, winds out of the south at 12 miles an hour, gusting up to 17. Not too bad, but it's going to steadily go up from here. But on the phone with me right now on the show today is Michael Booth, reporter for the Colorado Sun, and the article he wrote on a Colorado ranch and family in Lamar is just great. There's so much in this article that him and I, we can just briefly go over it. It'd take maybe two full shows of this article that you wrote to cover, but it's a great article. And you know, the one thing that I noticed, Michael, about he raises limousines and he's got approximately 800 head out there on this ranch, but the thing of it is they're all natural. They don't castrate, they don't brand, they don't use vaccinations, if I read that right. It's all natural, so it's grass-fed beef that he sells. And grass-fed beef is it's on the up and up. My wife, she buys it and we eat it, and so he's got it going on.
He does, and you know, there's different levels, as I'm sure your ranchers know, and some consumers. There's different levels of being environmentally friendly on the beef side. So they go all the way for GAP 5, I believe is the number, which includes things like the cattle have to stay on the ranch all the way up until slaughter, processing.
Right.
So you don't fatten them up at a feedlot. You don't finish them off. You send them directly to processing. As you said, no physical alteration of the cattle, so no brands, no castrating, and it goes beyond even the idea of, you know, organic feed and pasture grazing, things like that. So they go for that, and then the hope, again, is that not only are you doing things that are environmentally sound, but that consumer who's at Whole Foods in Denver or Oklahoma City or wherever will say, yeah, I'll pay 50 cents extra for that per pound, and you know, they will be able to make a little more income to keep the ranch going.
Yeah, exactly. And it's working. I mean, yes, my wife pays a little more, and I raise beef. We got beef right here, but no, she's not going to eat one of ours because she knows them all. So you know that. And so anyways, one of those deals. But you know, and there's really with the grass-fed beef, it's actually pretty good. I'm not publicly gonna say, do I want my corn-fed beef back? I'm not gonna answer that question on the air, but I did have to teach her to buy grass-fed beef during the summer when the grass is green, not during the winter when it's dormant. That's the only thing I'm going to say about that. So it was, but I don't know. It's great story on what they're doing, because he's also, I read where he's a wildlife commissioner on the commission board for the state of Colorado. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're, obviously that can not to create conflicts, but you just have to be really careful and he operates everything the right way. So, for example, on the ferrets, some nonprofits that are really interested in animal reintroduction, wildlife endangered species reintroduction, offer a stipend to ranchers or farmers or landowners who are willing to host an endangered species reintroduction and sort of monitor, help file reports on the animal welfare and animal health of the species has been reintroduced. And I think partly because of Dallas's connection to the Colorado Wildlife Commission and just, you know, what he needs, you know, from his ranch, he's decided they're not taking any of those stipends. They don't do that for reintroducing the ferret on their property. But for other ranchers, that can be an opportunity for yet a little more income, yet another way to maybe get some wildlife mitigation and habitat rebuilding. So, for example, another thing which is related to the bird species that the May Ranch has done is there are people who will come in and say, you know, we've got some habitat reconstruction money that we could spend on your property. So, for example, the black rails, they like marshland. That's what creates the bugs, that creates their habitat cover, whether it's cattails or other things, that keeps them away from foxes and coyotes. And so beavers aren't in as many places as they used to be in some cases to build you the dams that you need to back up the water.
Yep.
So what you do is you create underwater structures that are kind of Z-shaped that slow down the water or back it up and create the equivalent of beaver ponds, and they've done that there to help enhance the bird habitat.
Well, that I always thought I knew where all rivers started, most of them in the Midwest, because I'm kind of a, I don't know if I'm a river freak or whatever. It's like this North Fork of the Red River here. I know where it starts out here in the Texas Panhandle. And I always thought, I guess I never studied and looked, I always thought the Arkansas River started up there around Lamar. And it goes through Dodge City. And actually, the river goes back north. When it goes through Dodge City, it's one of the few rivers that goes almost straight north. And then it comes back through Kansas, down along Wichita, and back into Tulsa, and blah, blah, blah. And it's actually a navigation deal for barges from Tulsa on. But that the Arkansas River actually starts up there in the Rockies. I didn't know that until I looked it up this morning.
Yeah, and that's another thing we cover quite a bit at the Colorado Sun, is the water use in Colorado and overuse of water in Colorado. So Arkansas obviously goes east along the divide and east of the divide and ends up where you guys are and then beyond. But before it gets there, it's using the snowpack from Colorado to water a huge number of farms and everything from produce farms to row crop farms, but also a lot of cities. So there's a large number of cities from Colorado Springs to Pueblo to Aurora on the Front Range that are relying on that water for their municipal water. So making sure that there's enough water in the channel for all the farms, and then, of course, the threat of drying up the farms to buy up all that water for growing cities is always there. And so the May Ranch and other ranches around there have to try to plan their future around that, wondering if their water right is more valuable than anything else they do on the property, whether their neighbor is going to sell out and there's not going to be, their water won't be coming down the river anymore. So all kinds of water issues. And it's, you know, very dry right now. I mean, just clouds and clouds of dust. I think when we went out there in mid-November, there had been no precipitation around Lamar for about 3 months, Dallas said.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we are here in the western Oklahoma and Texas Panhandle right now. Matter of fact, yes, up there in the Texas Panhandle, close to Lamar, part of the Oklahoma Panhandle is in the red drought zone. So, yes, we're all hurting for rain. And you touched on a thing there in your statement about the cities and people buying up stuff and cities wanting to keep this water. Out in California, you know, California is the biggest agriculture state in the United States, and these cities are going out there because these farmers are struggling and buying the land up and taking that water that they have the right to use out of certain river and putting it back in the city, and they're not watering that farmland anymore. So they're taking farmland out of production, which some farmland needs to be taken out of production sometimes, but sometimes it don't. And somewhere or another, we got to make this all up.
Yeah, water rights issues are going to be huge for the next few years. Arizona, because of the Colorado River Compact, the rivers that head west from the Continental Divide and toward California, and water, you know, 40 million people in seven states, there is a lot less water in the Colorado River than they had planned on decades ago, 20% less water now, and maybe more in the next few years. So Arizona has been cut off from some of its Colorado River water, about 500,000 acre feet. They're making changes. People are asking, should we be, you know, farming cotton in the middle of the Arizona desert, or do we need to make changes? And there are farmers that are losing water there and tribes that are losing water there. So these water rights issues will be huge for all the ranches in eastern Colorado.
Well, there was a gentleman about 20 years ago, I remember saying, one of these days, water's going to be worth more than gold. And I just, I didn't laugh at him. I just thought, I don't believe that, but I'm starting to become a believer. So,
There is definitely holding on to your water rights is one of the big things in Colorado. We'll have a story on tomorrow's website that people, your listeners, might be interested in, coloradosun.com, about speculation in water, which isn't technically allowed in Colorado, but they feel like some people feel they need to strengthen the bill on that to keep water from going to a bunch of brokers who will buy it up from everybody else. So they can read that in tomorrow's website.
All right. Well, you were great to have on today, and this story is great. And like I said, you can go to the, it's on Facebook, it's on their website on coloradosun.com. Read this whole article. Like I said, there's this article, there's more in it than me and Michael can discuss today, but the whole article is great, and it just shows you what a rancher, what kind of what he'll go to keep his ranch, make his mortgage payments, and save it for his future, for the grandkids down the road, because it's a great deal. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah, thanks. And I hope if you are looking for the ranchers themselves in the future, have Dallas on. He'll have a million great stories for you and tell you even more about his ranch.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, will you email some of their information? I'll see if I can get a hold of them in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be great to have them on. I'll send you that.
Well, Michael, thanks again for coming on today and taking your time out. Unlike around here, you're not missing your lunch hour yet, but it's coming up, isn't it?
Yes, thanks a lot for your time, and hello to all your listeners.
All right. Thanks again. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Well, that was Michael Booth from the Colorado Sun in Denver, Colorado, talking about a great ranching story. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to him. He's a very knowledgeable reporter, and he knows what's going on out here, whether it's water, ranching, wildlife. He reports on it. He studies it. And so anyway, well, we'll be right back after this. It's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
When we're all on the same page, things run smoother, work gets completed faster, life is easier. And that's exactly what advanced technology from Valley does. IconX brings all of your pivots together into one manageable network with full remote capabilities, regardless of the brand. Get the most out of your pivots at a fraction of the cost of a full panel upgrade. Valley IconX. Any brand of pivot. One connected network. Smart irrigation. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
Attention high school juniors and seniors. Western Equipment is hosting the second annual Ag Tech Open Invitational this January 15th. Be at the Western Equipment John Deere dealership in Plainview, Texas for a chance to win $60,000 in scholarships and $25,000 in prizes. This competition is for any high school junior or senior that has an interest in mechanics, agriculture, or who just wants to win prizes. Parents and teachers don't feel left out. There will be a career expo to learn all about Western Equipment and job opportunities to pursue within the company. There are limited spots, so register today at west-equip.com/competition.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. For sale last Tuesday, December the 8th, we sold 776 cows, bulls, and calves. Thursday, December the 10th, we sold 4,296 calves and feeders for a total of 5,072 cattle per week. Tuesday, better killing cows bring 65 to 77. Thin cows bring 40 up to 65. Bulls bring 65 to 90. 3 to 4 year old open cows to breed bring 73 to 80. With our 2 to 4 year old bred cows, 885 to 1125. 5 to 8 year old bred cows, 925 to 975. And our 9 and older bred cows, 800 to 900. Hunter steer cattle, 3 to 350 weight steers, 211 to 214. 4 to 450, 181 to 201. 5 to 550, 162 to 194. 6 to 650, 144 to 168, 7 to 750, 143 and a half to 167 and a quarter, 8 to 850, 151 to 168.50, and our 9 to 950 steers, 142 to 153, 5 steers weighing 1,012 bring 147, 11 steers weighing 1127 bring 140. Hunter heifers, 3 to 350 weight heifers, 166 to 175, 4 to 450, 146 to 173, 5 to 550, 131 to 158, 6 to 650, 133 and a half to 165, 7 to 750, 135 to 156.50, 8 to 850, 130 to 152 and a half, 8 heifers weighing 960 bring 138, and 12 heifers weighing 1023 bring 124.50. Very good market. One more Tuesday sale, one more Thursday sale. Our last sale this year will be Thursday, December 16th. We have a very competitive cow market with buyers that do not buddy up. 14 feeder buyers each week, sending lots of feeders north. Give us a call. We'll see you this Tuesday. 8 a.m. sharp. Thanks again, Jerry Nine, and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
This hour's weather brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden. Complete nutrition for every animal, that's what you'll find in Hi-Pro Feeds. At Hi-Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local Hi-Pro Feeds dealer. Providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks. See their ad in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. See all they have to offer at HobartFarmAndGarden.com. That's HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
The Day in Ag is back. with Jimmy Clark.
I'm back. And there we have it. 58 degrees, humidity's at 29, the wind speed is at 20 miles an hour out of the south. Visibility is 10 miles, believe it or not. Anyway, here's your Hobart Farm and Garden forecast. This afternoon, sunny with a high near 68. South winds 14 to 17 miles an hour with gusts up to 24. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 73. South wind 14 to 18 miles an hour with gusts up to 25 miles an hour. Boom, Wednesday. Mostly sunny with a high near 79. Wind with a south wind. Windy with a south wind of 18 to 23 miles an hour, increasing 26 to 31 miles an hour with wind gusts up to 50 miles an hour. This is Wednesday. So tighten her down. Remember the famous words you heard on Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 is don't be that person. Watch what you're doing this week with fires, please. Thursday, sunny, high near 56, so it's going to chill down a little bit. But Friday, we warm back up. And Saturday, it's going to be a little airish out there, 42 for the high. And Saturday night, a low around 23. So if you don't have your hoses drained, if you don't have your antifreeze checked, because, you know, we get into that mode where we're trying to get everything else done on the farm and ranch because it's been such warm weather. You need to check that stuff now because 23 will freeze some stuff. And tomorrow, after Lacey's on the show, I'm going to have some winterizing projects for you guys to think about out there with your wife. My boss come in. You want to talk, boss?
Just a little bit.
All right. Gabe, I don't know if anybody knows him out there. Gabe, he's my boss. And when he comes in, I get scared and nervous, but he has a smile on his face, so I'm good to go.
Hey, Jimmy, we was just talking about it earlier. We're looking for was talking about getting a brand made.
Yep.
Because, you know, anybody that's going to work here is going to have a brand on them like they do on the show, right? Everybody else does. Yeah. And then if you leave, you don't ever leave.
Right.
So we're trying to get a brand for KECO.
If you don't get a brand, you're going to the rail station?
You go to the train station. That's right. I've got people here that Aaron said he'd willingly take anybody to the train station. Anybody. So we're looking for a brand, and we're looking for some help out there. If you guys, anybody is kind of a brand expert that builds brands and has something cool, and we're not really sure. And if you guys out there kind of know something, Jimmy kind of drew us one, but he had somebody draw us one.
It was too plain.
It was super plain.
But you got to remember when you're making a brand for cattle, when you brand...
This is for humans.
I know, but still, their skin might peel off.
Well, maybe. Maybe. This is only for you, Jimmy. Yeah. We're only really making this for you.
That's what I was afraid of. Anyway, just take the four letters. KECO and make the brand.
KECO, they're looking to try to put a brand together of some sort. We looked at yours. You're rocking, but it's not a rock station.
Yeah.
If it was a rock station, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's not a rocking. It's a trough.
Oh, it's a trough. Is that the sea trough?
That's the sea trough ranch. Because a rocking is round.
That's right. Like a rocking chair.
Yeah. Yep. Like a rocking chair. So anyway,
You guys text it in if you want to draw it. Put it on a napkin. I don't care. We just email it to Jimmy. Get it to Jimmy somehow.
Yeah. Drop it by the office.
Just drop it by the office here. If you got a little drawing of something you think might work, we'd like to get one from people that listen right here on this show.
Right. And if we end up using your brand, you'll get a free cap.
That's right. With that brand on it. That's right.
All right. Thanks for stopping by, boss.
All right, Jimmy. Doing a good job, man.
All right. All right, man, that helped me out. Took up a couple more minutes on my show. But anyway, the people ask me where I come up with some of these stories or these interviews that I get. One of my best friends of all times that I met back in 1980, right out of welding school. He was the welding instructor for the Votech at Stillwater. And he went to work at the same place I did, Ben's Welding over there at Foss. And I met him, and he's been a great friend ever since. And he's originally from Leedy, Oklahoma, Mr. Ron Farrell. he sent me this article on the May Ranch in Colorado. And, I mean, that's it. He lives in Oklahoma City. He sent me the article. He was listening today. And that's how, I mean, this is how it works out. You know, it's, you guys know I'm not a professional journalist. So this is how I get these stories. So anyway, hey, I have the Texas and Oklahoma cattle auction summaries from last week. And boy, Texas, they were selling cattle like crazy down there this week. Compared to last week, feeder steers and heifers sold steady to $5 higher. Trade activity and demand was moderate to good. The area remains dry and with high winds causing fire warnings. Supplies included 87% feeder cattle, 53% of that was steers, 44% was heifers, 2% of that was bulls, but no dairy cattle, 11% was slaughter. And 2% was replacement cattle that was sold in Texas last week. And they were the total receipts of 9,160 heads sold in Texas last week compared to 7,901 the week before. And I'm just going to, I got a little bit of time here. I'm going to run over some of the steers that were actually sold, just pick some. Like I said, I'm not a professional auctioneer here. So 53 head of steers were sold, average weight. Weight was 428, and they were bringing up to $2.16 a pound. Wow, that was good. Here we go, 206 head, average weight 481, bringing $1.80, bringing up to $1.92, but these 200 head brought $180 per 100 weight, basically. And then we come on down here to the mid-range of the 500, 587, 126 head, brought $1.64.10. And they, the 500 range was bringing up to $1.76. And then we get down here in the 600 range, and we got 107 head that average weight 667 on the weight. They brought $1.58 on per 100 or per pound on that, and some of them were bringing up to $165 per 100 weight. And that was in Texas. Back over here to Oklahoma, compared to last week, feeder steers steady to $3 higher. Feeder heifers were steady to $2 higher. Steer calves, $4 to $7 higher. Heifer calves sold $2 to $5 lower. Demand was very good in all classes. Slaughter cattle prices remained steady this week. Sales average larger as dry conditions in a good market is encouraging some producers to sell early. 1 week left to auctions before the holidays, and those sales are expected to be large. Supply included 92% feeder cattle, 55% of them were steers, 0% were dairy, 40% was heifers, 4% were bulls, 6% slaughter cattle, and 2% of the total receipts for Oklahoma was replacement cattle. Total receipts in Oklahoma last week, 51,902 heads. Holy moly. That's a lot of cattle sold last week. The week before was 43,000, but this time last year was 48,842. So we're on the trend. We're a little higher than last year, but this always happens in December. Everybody's getting those winged calves and unwinged calves and all the thing to the market. Let's go over some of the steers that were sold here in Oklahoma. Let's pick out the 71 head, averaging weight. These are steers. Average weight was 275, brought $222.67 per 100 weight. Some of the same weight class was bringing up to $235 per 100 weight. Let's go down here to the 300-pound range, and we have fancy ones here, 328. $245 per hundred weight. I guess that guy was happy. Let's go down here into the 426 weight. They brought $210.32 per hundred weight. Some in that same 400, mid 400 weight was bringing $2.33 per pound. So really good. Let's go down here into 500 weight. 812 head, average weight 525, brought $182.52 per hundred weight. So there you go. Great market. Get them gathered up, boys. Do your roundup. And it's that time of the year. Let's go Brandon. And I don't mean B-R-A-N-D-O-N. B-R-A-N-D-O-N. I'm talking about B-R-A-N-D-I-N. Let's go, Brandon. It's that time of the year to get the cattle work. You guys have a great day. See you tomorrow. God bless. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Number one for new country.
KECO, Elk City.